Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. When did cheap plastic disposables with 90s-style graffiti art become the norm? No offense if gaudy pastel is your style, but the Flonk Max Smart embodies a smarter way to vape. The Flonk is sleek and discreet, and the most popular flavors are available nicotine-free and in 2% and 5% strength. A flexible disposable with a smart LED screen, the Flonk churns out 10,000 dense and delicious puffs. Visit MyPod.com and use promo code STOOL for 25% off Flonk vapes.
Reveille, reveille, reveille! Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have all kinds of stuff in the magazine. The main story that we're going to talk to you about is the Taliban. The Taliban is bored with their jobs. That's not something I thought I would say, right, Kate?
No, they are complaining about their 9-to-5 jobs now that they're in peacetime. Now they feel like a bunch of pogues with nothing going on, and this story is pretty funny.
So they're just
going
to start committing crimes? And
an actual researcher went out and interviewed them, and they were like, this fucking grind sucks, man. The commute's killing me in central Kabul, whatever. So anyway,
like, we've all done some stuff on this show that has like elements of bravery in it. I ain't going to Afghanistan to interview the Taliban. Just not happening.
No.
There's way too much of a chance of you not coming back.
Do you remember when we first started Cons? I think it was like year one or two into it, and I forget who it was, but it was a 4-star general. Oh, it was the commandant. The commandant reached out to us and was like, hey, we're going on a USO tour. Obviously, the commandant's people. They reached out. We're going to on a tour in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we wanted to see if any of the military influencers want to go. Would you guys be interested? And I asked Dave, I was like, can we go to Iraq? And he was like, no. Like, what are you talking? No. All right, so we got that story. We're going to talk about...
Well, could you imagine the views if we had gone to Iraq and something had happened?
Yeah, it might have been pretty decent. But round number two, we have an earthquake in Turkey. We're going to tell you about those things. Round number three, we have key takeaways from the State of the Union address to include that adorable... I'm going to say it. The most favorite congressman that we have on the show, George Santos. He's the one that we like the most, right? Like, at least he's interesting. Treat. And then Mitt Romney, the melatoast? Isn't that? What's that word?
Milk toast.
Is it milk toast?
We'll get into all that. Yes. Milk toast, boring, bland. But yeah, those two went at it. But it's quick. It's light. I'm not getting into politics. I'm just telling you, here's some of the key takeaways. The who, what, when, where, why. What's the buzz? That's it.
I'm going to absolutely lib out.
Finally, a quick little news roundup by me, including a really funny one from the Marines Reddit page with there's something's going on the ranges recently that's getting some of them real pissed off. It's very funny. So
all right.
That.
Well, here we go. Today's episode is brought to you by our good friends at Omaha Steaks. Valentine's Day is coming. Fall in love with the flavor that you save with delectable dishes and tantalizing taste from Omaha Steak. With their love at first bite, it's the perfect time to celebrate your better half and bring steakhouse experience home for Valentine's Day. Go to omahasteak.com, use the promo code ZERO at checkout, and get $30 off your order. That's $30 in endless variety of delicious gourmet food, from perfectly aged tender steaks to juicy burgers, decadent desserts, and a classic comfort meal. Everybody's guaranteed to be perfect, and it's backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Visit omahasteaks.com, enter ZERO at checkout, and get $30 off your order today. No one comes close to matching the tenderness, the flavor, the value of Omaha Steaks. Order today, and your special meal with your special someone is going to make that special night even more special. Visit omahasteaks.com. Use promo code ZERO at checkout to get $30 off your own order. And Katie is going to come out next week with a cooking her own steak video. So you might want to check that bad boy out.
Large, who has a very fancy kitchen and fancy things and is great at cooking, is going to... I'm going to leave it completely untouched, my kitchen. He's going to come over. Mine's the kind of kitchen where you open up things and you don't know if everything's going to fall out on you. Mm-hmm. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no organization. There's probably crumbs in my
fork drawer. I, for one, am shocked at that revelation.
Yes, yes. I know you can't believe it. But he's going to come over and we're going to show that even an idiot like me can make amazing steaks with Omaha Steaks.
Time out. When was this decided?
It's called Kate Night. Instead of date night, getting everyone ready for Valentine's Day. He's going to come over and he's going to help me cook Pat, my baby dad, a nice steak for Valentine's Day. So that's coming out this week too. I'm very excited. We're shooting that tomorrow afternoon. Yeah.
All right, here we go with the show.
Okay, round number one. The Taliban, as we said, are fucking bored now. Those poor guys. What a shame. But before we get into that, I just want to go over real quick. They did this big study in England a few years ago about the most boring jobs. So they all these different studies that were going on, they just attached this sheet to each of them asking people. So like hundreds of people across hundreds of studies. What are the most boring jobs?
Can I Top guess? Five. I haven't looked. I saw that there was five, but I didn't go through it. Top five jobs that I wouldn't want to do, sell like call center, like being on a call center and trying to get folks to buy anything like a newspaper. That would be terrible. Second, I think being a lawnmower would be boring. Like you just do the same things over and over
again.
Oh,
disagree.
Yeah.
You're outside, and I would just getting tan.
I think one of those shuttle drivers at like hotels that has to just go back and forth from the hotel to the and fourth, I think the Pope. Like the Pope would be boring. Like everybody just constant, you can't fuck, you can't drink, but everybody wants to talk to you. You got to be in all these big things and you got to wear a silly hat every day. I wouldn't want to be the Pope. No thank you.
Yeah, no, not a good time.
Did I get any of
shuttle
them?
Drivers
kind
I
of
used to work at I used to work at Wells Fargo, and after late basketball games and stuff like that, the Wells Fargo Center, you had to take a shuttle. They made the employees park like 5 miles away in a swamp and you had to take a shuttle to get to work. And the shuttle drivers would always just pull their shuttles into the boonies of the swamps and sleep. So it'd just be a clump of us waiting for hours for those fucking shuttles. So I'm glad that job's boring. Fuck those people. Anyways, I'm sorry. That was just brought back memories.
All right, DIM or volunteer firefighters, Kate? Who do you like more?
I have to go. I like, in comparison, volunteer firefighters are the kings and queens there. But top five most boring jobs: data analysis, accounting, tax and insurance type work, cleaning and banking. And those are jobs that the Taliban also have to do.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about the taxes, but insurance work, but I'm sure they have their own little system.
I'm sure they have pretty intense taxes.
But
yeah,
now,
your head cut off.
Now that they've gone from fighting to being, the rulers of that country, all of that stuff falls on them now. And so all these guys who used to be war fighters are now finding themselves doing data, accounting, banking, like all that boring shit that people, that's the sock across the board, across the world.
And they're like that Russian poker player in Boondock Saints where he's like, you're not supposed to tell a person you're going to cut his head off anymore.
Yeah, right. So this is from Matthew Galt at Vice. Via a report by, it's called Afghanistan Analytics Network. It's a nonprofit research group. And this guy just went and interviewed a bunch of Taliban. And this is the story. The Taliban may have won the war in Afghanistan, but the jihadists who once spent their days riding horses in the countryside are now stuck behind a desk, lamenting their boring computer jobs, spending all their time on Twitter, high rent, and commutes to work. In a series of interviews with five former Mujahideen turned government functionaries and police officers, the Afghanistan Analytics Network shed light on the inner lives of the men who spent a lifetime fighting an empire only to win and have to run a country. So this guy, Sabawoon Samin, he conducted the interviews in person in Kabul primarily, and basically talking to five Taliban, see how they're adjusting to this big victory. They were ages 24 to 32. And had spent between 6 to 11 years in the Taliban at different ranks. So a Taliban commander, a sniper, a deputy commander, and two basic infantry guys, like two fighters.
Two grunts, yeah.
Yeah, two grunts, essentially. After the fall of the Islamic Republic, and once all that shit was done in the US left, these men secured jobs for the new government in Kabul, for the Taliban's government. So two got civilian jobs, and the other three are in security positions. Huzaifa, a former sniper, said life was simple and free during the jihad. All we had to deal with was making plans for attacks. People didn't expect much from us, and we had little responsibility towards them. Whereas now, if someone is hungry, we're responsible for that. The Taliban used to be free of restrictions, but now we sit in one place behind a desk and a computer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Life's become so wearisome. You do the same things every day. Being away from family has doubled the problem.
I mean, this legitimately sounds like some kid that you interview in the barracks and it's their first time being away at Christmas. Like, nobody has any sympathy for you, dude. Sorry, your life is boring, but you also made women not be able to go to school, not be able to work, not be able to show their faces.
Well, we'll get into all that. Yeah. But yeah, like they're basically saying too, like before when they were fighting, I feel like the Afghan people were looking to the US and everybody else who came in who like, okay, keep fixing this. What's going on? Where's our next meal? Like, who's building up our government? And now those heads of the Afghan people have turned completely to the Taliban saying, now what? And they feel that pressure.
And that's where revolution really comes from, is when that kind of thing happens. When you're starving and you can't, and the government's keeping you down, that's when a revolution happens.
Yeah. And so 25-year-old Abdul Nafi said, I sometimes miss the jihad life for all the good things it had. It's our ministry. In our ministry, there's little work for me to do, so I spend most of my time on Twitter. We're connected to speedy Wi-Fi and internet. Many Mujahideen, including me, are addicted to the internet, especially Twitter.
I mean, honestly, so, that sounds like me at UTSA when I got out. Yeah. Like the same exact thing. I was bored, so I spent a lot of time on Twitter.
You try to look busy, but for the most part, you're just dicking around online all day.
Yeah.
None of the interviewed men are native to Kabul. They're all from the outer provinces who moved there after the U.S. left. Omar Mansour said, I haven't bought my family to Kabul. The rent, he's basically saying the rent is too high.
It's too damn high. Yeah.
Roughly $180 a month. It is fully sufficient for his small hometown, but not for Kabul. As soon as, God willing, I have a good salary, I'll bring my family here. So they're complaining about
this mirrors in a lot of way to veterans in this country getting out and moving to major cities. And they're like, wait,
it's like almost shocking. You change those names to Billy and Steve and Amber. It sounds totally different.
He went on to say, he's talking about how during war times, like you kind of came and went as you pleased. And now he says, however, these days you have to go to the office before 8 a.m. and stay till 4. If you don't, you're considered absent. You get your
Taliban's clocking in
8 a.m. The Taliban hours are 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And that's if you try and call them for desk help after that, you're screwed. Mm-hmm.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Peace and civilization has its drawbacks, and the warriors of the Taliban have spent more than a generation fighting. It's hard to flip the switch and make the transition. It's difficult not to miss out on the days of jihad, said Abdul Nafi, a farmer, lamenting the pursuit of money that's coming to dominate life in Afghanistan. So,
There are so many
similarities between things that you hear veterans saying here, and they, like, in a way, people are like, oh, it's so tough that you had to deploy and blah, blah, blah. But a little part is you like, yeah, but when I was deployed, I didn't have to worry about childcare. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to pay a dime for anything. I didn't have any of those personal family hardships, whatever. Like, you did your job for the day and then you were done. And that's
as a single person, like you were in Afghanistan. I think it is a little bit different when you have kids and stuff, but as a single person, which is most of these younger people, the junior folks, dude, it's fun, man. Like there's certain, you're with your buddies all the time. Like the people that you're around all the time, you're doing training, still doing some missions here and there. It's a good time. It really, like, that's the reason why people miss it.
Yeah. Well, and talking about missing it, you take the age of these people, 24 to 32, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, their entire life, all they've known, like as far back as they can have memories, all they've known is war. So by no means am I empathizing or giving any sympathy to the Taliban, because they're saying like, they missed
Taliban
war.
Taliban lover,
like,
cons, don't want that on the
room. No. Don't want that out there. But from just a human standpoint, it's like your entire life, you know one thing, and now it's completely opposite. I could get how that is going to screw with most people's brains.
And I think they said it, there's some big study about war-torn regions where they said it takes 3 generations to like mentally cleanse the war palate and have a normal life.
That's why no Americans are normal.
You pass your trauma on, you pass, like, you know, the economic hardship of it. They say it takes about 3 generations. And Afghanistan has not had that ever, I don't think. Like, they don't. And then, you know, and again, reminder, don't go feeling sorry for them. They've been unable to stabilize the economy because their rules are still so ass backwards and it's still so scary to go there that foreign aid, potential investors, if I'm looking to expand my company, I don't want to go to Afghanistan. I don't want to have to deal with the fucking Taliban. So they're losing out on endless opportunities.
Zero and tourism dollars. Zero
tourism. And it's causing people to suffer horribly. They're still doing public lashings. The images of the and the reports coming out that of the starvation issue that's happening there is horrible. There's really credible reports. I looked into this that people are selling their kidneys. There's whole towns that are known for it. And much worse, their children to help feed families. That sounds like a wives' tale or whatever. Mm-hmm. Look into it. This is happening. They've taken education away from women and girls entirely. Very few women can even work now. None of them can be a part of public life. Forced marriages, slavery. I could go on and on. So I'm glad they're miserable. I'm glad they're hating their 9-to-5s. But it just shows, like, now that this switch has taken place, the thing they were fighting for, it's not so sweet on the other side, as now they are the ones responsible for this country and these people. So I just thought it was kind of interesting.
Humanizing. I'd be interested. Yeah,
them, but at the same time, they still suck.
If we take it through the lens of America, and you talked about how it takes three generations to cleanse, think about the generations whose parents fought in World War II and then Korea. Those parents, you know, specifically that, you know, the men, because that was the majority of them, probably were, you know, passed down a lot more discipline, maybe a little more harsh on their children. So then if you know that as children, then you pass that down to your generation. I'd be interested if there was a study in this country done about, like, how, like, the baby boomer generation raised their children. Yeah,
there has been big time. Like, the difference between the World War II parents, the Korea parents, especially if they're both, and then the boomer generation after. The boomer generation, the one that shits on participation trophies the most, they're the ones that came up with it. Like, it's their kids that were getting it. Kids that are millennial kids didn't go up and be like, hey, can you guys give us a participation trophy? No, that was the coaches. Like, the
but so I wonder then, too, if you will see another shift when people of our generation, you know, our children come of age, and if we treat them collectively any differently than our parents treated us.
I think they'll hate war. I think that will be
I think the difference is our wars have been foreign, so it's very different. Mm-hmm. The people in Afghanistan have been living it this entire time.
We've never had to walk out and be like, oh, is there an IED outside my door?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Very different when I'm talking about how much time removed than the U.S. version of war. I remember doing, I would always bring like crayons and paper for little kids to give to the Afghan kids to draw. And 9 times out of 10, the only things they would draw were guns and tanks and war stuff, because that's literally all they knew. I have a whole trunk full.
I mean, that's
drawings.
Fourth graders anywhere. That's just fourth graders. I mean,
but no, it was like
Cardi's markedly never been around anything, and Cardi'd be like, check out this fucking bazooka, Dad.
Fair enough. But anyway, I'm glad they're miserable.
All right, let's move on to round number two. Talk about something real negative.
No.
We got some negative stuff going on. Earthquake in Turkey. It was terrible. In Syria as well.
Yeah. Early Monday morning, a 7.8 earthquake hit Turkey and war-torn northern Syria. And that toll is going to be well over 10,000 people. It's one of the most horrific earthquakes to happen. Just fucking terrible. Over 6,600 buildings have collapsed, and that's what's really adding to the trouble. I was reading about the building regulations are obviously much looser in other countries, and it was basically a free-for-all there. And in 2000, they revamped things and said, hey, future buildings have to be built with this earthquake stuff in mind. But there's so much corruption and so much whatever that it wasn't done. And there's videos of brand new buildings completely collapsing. Count that in too. A building collapses and then it's freezing and snowing out. And so people have nowhere to go after this too. It's just a horrible thing. So far, the U.S. has sent 100 L.A. County firefighters, the Fairfax County, Virginia search and rescue team, structural engineer supplies, half a dozen specially trained dogs, and community groups across the country are donating items like clothing, baby products, flashlights. Google it. I Googled and found real quick place in my community. A lot of Turkish Americans are organizing stuff to send. So just Google it and find stuff to send because they really need all the help they can get. They've also deployed 28,000 of their own military forces to go and help out as they can. And tons of other countries are on the way too. The fire of, there's this port of Iskenderun got set on fire. Like thousands of shipping containers toppled like toys and they all exploded and burst into flames. That's still going strong. There was concerns about the third largest dam in the world breaking, but it looks like that's going to be okay. And then finally, at U.S. Incirlik Air Base, I'm probably saying that wrong, in Turkey, there's nearly 2,000 troops and DOD civilians there, all accounted for, no casualties. And I'm assuming it looks like a lot of assistance is going to be coming through that air base there. So they'll be working quickly. But I've been following a lot of our U.S., I'm saying this wrong, like U.S. Response Command and blah, blah, blah. And I've never really looked at that branch of the DOD. So I'm following that more closely to see how they orchestrate all this stuff. Because even in this chaos, how does, you know, LA County firefighters get there? Where do they go and who do they talk to and what, like, even all that's like,
how do they know who, even where to begin to help? Right.
Where do you even begin? And so it's crazy. And they have to be safe too. Like, there's been over 100 aftershocks. And it's just,
did you see anything about that? Because a lot of those Syrian cities are completely shelled in a lot of places, like Aleppo and places like that. I wonder if that had some effect, because this, the structural integrity, I would imagine the look of a lot of those buildings in Syria, that has to play a part. Like the way that they have been completely shelled for years and years and years there, I wonder if that plays a part in how their buildings.
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Chi's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3Chi.com. That's 3Chi.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code BARSTOOL20.
Keep up.
Are falling apart. Yeah, I just, that I'm sure plays a part in this whole humanitarian disaster. So I know that's a sad news round, but like, look and see if there's anything, if you have extra stuff to spare that you can send. There's drop off points in cities and towns across the country going on right now. But just crazy stuff, just crazy footage coming out of that. And that's that. Tell my really sad news roundup.
No, that was fun. Let's go into some more fun stuff where we get to make fun of George Santos. That's what I really like to do. So we had the State of the Union last night. I think it was once again like last year at the beginning of it. Old Biden, old Sleepy Joe had a vitamin B shot. He was ready to go for a little while. Hour number three of that thing, he was winding down. It was clear that he needed a little bit of a tea, maybe some warm milk and some crackers on his tummy before he went to sleep.
Yeah, but there's a couple of key moments, key takeaways. One, before it began, Mitt Romney walking by the now infamous...
George Santos?
George Santos. He walks by and my brain just went blank. I had the wrong name written down there. I had Romney yelling at DeSantis, which did not, I don't think that happened. That would have been something else. Romney yells at George Santos before the speech, "You don't belong here," and called him a sick. I don't want to use cuss words on here. Called him a sick puppy.
Whoa.
That's a called really big a insult in the Mormon community. I think someone's a sick puppy.
That's a step past kick rocks, I think.
Yeah, it is.
As I feel like we all kind of just felt was going to happen, Marjorie Taylor Greene making a scene. She rolled up wearing all white, big white faux fur or real fur. I don't know. Go off, queen. She had a whole big thing. She rolled up with a white balloon. So she looked like a white balloon. She rolled up with a white balloon to talk about the Chinese spy balloon. And then she yelled liar at Biden while he was discussing potential cuts to Social Security and Medicare. It reminded me of Legally Blonde when she throws the chocolates at the TV and she yells liar. It was very similar to that. I think she knows exactly what she's doing.
Oh, and she absolutely does.
I think she's brilliant. She, both sides, whether you love her or hate her, you're talking about her, you're getting her image out there, you're getting her message out there, and you're elevating her like crazy.
She's like the Skip Bayless of the right.
But she knew when she wore what she wore. She brought the balloon because she knew that was going to be making the rounds and she was going to be a top story and people are going to be looking into her. Really smart. Say what you will.
I just want to just expound on that a little bit, because people give me a hard time and say, you know, a Pollyanna take or I'm an idealist. I still think there should be decorum on both sides of the aisle. And the picture of her standing up and booing the president, if you don't like what he's saying, that's fine. Don't clap, sit there, make a smirk, do something. But the way that she was acting, like she's at a football game, like cheering against her rival. I'm sorry. I get the sideshow or circus show that politics has devolved into. And I agree with both of you and what you've said, that like, she's doing this on purpose and knows what she's doing. So people are talking about her much like I am right now, but it still, for me, doesn't sit well with me that we've just like lost complete control of how people are supposed to act in those hallowed buildings.
See, so I kind of disagree because I don't think that we're ever going to go back to normal decorum and normal stuff. Because once you open that Pandora's box, stuffing everybody's little streamers back inside is next to impossible. Mm-hmm. Every time Marjorie Taylor Greene starts talking, the only thing I think of is that woman from Princess Bride, where basically she was the State of the Union. Bow to her if you want to, your queen of refuge, your queen of garbage. But she would say that to Biden instead of the sheriff of Nottingham, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that I just like to think of it like a really boring and stuffy WWE storyline is how I like to
I mean, she looked
now.
Like Ric Flair, flat out. She looked like Ric Flair, like nature boy Ric Flair.
She wasn't
really
wearing
did.
Alligator shoes.
among the, veteran stuff, more resources to prevent suicides, more financial assistance for veterans in danger of losing their homes, and other shit we've been hearing for every single administration, but that has never changed. So I heard that part and I was like, yawn, whatever. Okay.
Yeah. I saw a tweet from our pal veteran with a sign, and he's made a great point. He's like, everyone wants to help veterans until it's time to help veterans. It's like, how many times can we say the same issues are leading to suicide, the same issues are leading to homelessness before something's done about it?
I will say.
The
VA has been making steps, and as we announced the other week, that now that I think it's huge that if you're having a mental health crisis,
yes,
whether you're enrolled in the VA or not, you can get care immediately. You can get up to 90 days of inpatient or outpatient treatment without having to pay a dime. You don't have to pay for your ambulance. You don't have to, like, there is progress being made, and there people do care.
Yeah, I agree.
And people are working very hard on that. So,
and this is like, we signed the PAC Act. That looks like there is a little momentum. I mean, we've all heard that 21 a day thing. Well, the VA's numbers are down to 15 now, which is a big improvement. Like, there's still obviously a long ways to go, but I think that the VA is making some strides.
Yeah. That's really, for me, there's nothing too crazy, I don't think.
We didn't even talk about Mitt. Okay.
We did. We had a whole conversation about it about 5 minutes ago.
I wish one thing we didn't mention, and I really wish Nick was here for this, because I think I could get backed up on this. But what did you guys think of? No. the kiss between President Biden's wife, Joe Biden, and Douglas Emhoff, the first or second husband of the country, Kamala Harris.
I didn't see that kiss. Who
kissed
who?
They accidentally lip connected.
Tongue or no?
First lady, no. Full tongue, full. Yeah. She made it to second base on him.
Any little under the pants HJs or over the pants HJs?
No. But I think it was one of those things. They were both going towards each other, and you could see a quick like, and then boop. Lips connected. And I think it was overthinking.
I've never had an accidental kiss in my life. Never.
Well, here's where I wish Nick was here, because I think this is very much a regional thing. In the New York and New Jersey area, it's very common to kiss hello. Like, I was kissing female friends hello, like as far back as high school. Like, that was just how we said hello to one another. And sometimes, like, you just didn't get the full cheek, you got a little closer to the lips, but it was never a thing. And I looked it up. Emhoff's from Brooklyn. So, I mean, it's like, this is just what he grew up with, given the kiss hello. And they were just a little too close for a lot of people's comfort. Because the other thing is, I've watched my wife at family parties or family events or parties with friends of mine from where I grew up. And she struggles with this. And she doesn't. Yeah. She's like, I don't know how to do that. It's weird to me. And I could see how the rest of the country looks at that and thinks it's weird, but it's very much a regional thing.
I know. Yeah. I agree with you. I'm a Southern boy. Whenever I first went to New York, it's Kelly Keegs, I think, actually. Like, she came up to me and I met her for the first time and she gave me a kiss on the cheek whenever we met.
Right.
And I was like, who is this scandalous lady? Like, I'm a married man.
Yeah, no,
I
people do. That is a thing for sure. So who knows? But big kerfuffle over that, too.
Is that it, Kate? Is that the roundup? Or no?
Finally, I just had one last thing that I saw on Reddit. It's not necessarily news, but I really thought it was funny. So the post was by this guy, Money Hungry Mitch. He posts, "We need to stop this fucking trend as of yesterday. Discussion. I'm not talking about picking on an individual Marine for sucking at being a Marine or faded camis or binge drinking or hazing. I'm talking about this fucking trend on the rifle range in Camp Lejeune, Stone Bay, where motherfuckers have wagons and they have their assault pack, a chair, and their rifle with ammo in the wagon. Bro, are you fucking serious? Is it too much for y'all? This shit is fucking ridiculous. You're a fucking warfighter, a killer, but you got your shit in a wagon? I'm so tempted to snap a picture and submit it so that everyone can say, this y'all? Posting shit in a wagon? Edit also to the
hey
staff
there, fucking wagon. Hey there, wagon
also,
wheel.
To the staff NCO using his baby's stroller to wheel around his rifling gear. Fuck you, dude.
Dude, that makes, I know that we're like, we don't like being vet bros and shit like that.
I know.
That makes me
want to
be a vet. That and umbrellas really fucking trigger me. Like, on the rifle range? Are you kidding me, dude?
In
like, you can't carry your shit at the range?
Back in, I'll say it out loud. I've never heard of this as a variant. Back in my day, if you rolled onto the Camp Pendleton range, even in the most pogass unit, with a fucking with your shit in a baby stroller, I think they would send you to be the target.
I think so too. Yeah,
I don't think you survive that.
You would catch it. You might, honest to God, if you weren't like a staff NCO wouldn't, but if you were a PFC and a Lance Corporal and you did that, you legitimately might catch a beating. Like there might be NCOs and staff NCOs that are so pissed about that, they take you to the wood line and beat your ass. Like that could legitimately happen. And this, and I would be like, it's one of those things where I would turn my back to it because there's just certain things that you don't do. And I mean,
something like, I need to better understand though about, cause I've never been to Pendleton. Are they talking about like, cause obviously like you jump on a two-ton, you know, you put all your gear in a two-ton and you get a ride to most ranges, but then you carry it. What, like, do you walk from the barracks typically to go
sometimes
to this range?
It depends. Like you could have a bus pick you up and everybody goes, or you can meet at the armory and walk across the street. It really just depends where the armory and where the range is, like how
even
you
then,
actually get there.
It's no more shit than you'd have on you for a real ass hike anyway. So
right,
yeah, you have a pack.
There's no reason to
shit.
Have any of that.
Right.
No.
I almost feel like a wagon's extra work.
Right.
Unless you have some kind of medical shit. But yeah, terrible. Somebody posted a meme of concerned guy looking down from heaven. And it says John Basselin watching staff NCOs bring baby strollers and wagons to the rifle range to carry their weapon and gear. It's gaining
and that
a lot
shows
of traction.
A lack of fear for a senior enlisted too.
Yeah.
So that means senior enlisted need to get their shit together. I mean, could you imagine? I've told you enough story about Lugo. Lugo might have somebody's throat.
What would Lugo? What would Lugo say if he saw
hey
this?
Hey there, fucking wagon. Come here, dog. What the fuck are you doing? We carry shit. We hump till we fucking die. That's what we do.
Like a wagon wheel.
If I did that, I think I would have been counseled, negatively counseled, and like,
without question.
And demoted. Like, they would have murdered me. So, anyway.
I don't know
like
what
I've
done
thing.
At that time. But that wouldn't have been good.
Anyway.
Wouldn't have been good. All right, let's move on to some save rounds and alibis. Connor, today we will start with you.
Yeah, so I was at the doctor the other day. And I don't know if everybody knows this, but there is such thing as good cholesterol. And that has to be at a certain level, too. And mine is a notch below where it's supposed to be. So of course I start to Google and like, what can I do to get this number into the accepted range, whether that's exercise or certain foods. One of the foods, red wine. And now it makes sense why all those people in Italy just live forever because they just drink red wine with every meal.
Good
so I'm pretty excited that,
you
know, in order to improve my health, I just need to enjoy more good wine. And then the other thing, you know, they make you get on the scale and say your weight. Now, granted, all right, I'm not the same weight I was in college or even in the army. I'm not crazy far off, but I just got to thinking, like, is this just kind of like what my weight is now? Like what my normal weight is?
What is
do
it?
I just
where
have
are
to
you at? We have, let me guess.
Yeah, say it.
I think 207.
That would have been when I was in college. I'm like 220 now.
Oh.
And like, I you know, I can lose weight, but then it ultimately always gets back to like 220.
Yeah, you're married. What's you got a kid point? On the way. Just fucking let it go, dude.
Let
just,
it go.
I'll let you borrow some of my old belts. You'll be fine. I mean, that's the first the first 5 year or 5 years of life of these kids' life. You ain't got to worry about how you look. You're going to be in 38 pants by the time you know it.
No, and then that's you the thing. Are, I don't want my clothes are, to stop fitting.
Yeah, 38. Oh. That's what's coming for you. 36, oh. Maybe if you're feeling lucky, but that badunka dunk that you're tracking, you are definitely going in 38s.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I just hit 150 again. I got real sick a couple months ago. I went down to 135. I was like, oh shit, once I get my braces off, this is hot girl season.
It's over for these hoes, yeah.
But I wear these tights now that now feel scandalous when I put them on walking a day. My butt cheeks are squeaking. Squeak, squeak, squeak.
I saw, speaking of butt cheeks out, I saw this new, have you guys ever heard of this term? It's like glitchy, glit, glabby. It's something that's a new word for camel toe, like it's a different camel toe.
I haven't seen that.
And instead of a camel toe, like I guess workout women are getting tired of people being like, hey dude, you got some
you got a wide
set vagina that's being showed off by your fucking Lululemons. Well, there's a new phrase, and this woman that I saw, she was like, I know that my glitchy's out or something that it's called. I needed to write it down. It was a fantastic new word for a camel toe. It's a
double standard. I remember I belonged to the Y in high school, and our priest, I went to a Catholic church, Father Browers, German guy, used to go to the Y, and it was the talk of the town, in like a wrestling singlet. And he would be on the machines like thrusting around and stuff. And you could see every inch of that man's penis.
I wonder why the Catholic Church had so many issues.
I know. I'm just saying, if you can have your dicks and balls out, I should be able to have
a
glitch.
Fucking singlet.
Couple glitches around the gym. I don't see what the problem is.
Anything else, Cons?
Nope, that's it.
All right, any new camel toe words you want to talk about, or that's just
me? I'm all set.
Okay. Kate, what do you got?
I got two things. One, I love the outdoors, and I think through some of the hardest times in my life, especially after getting out of the military, learning to hike, because you think like, oh, you just go hiking, but there is stuff you gotta, the right gear and blah, blah, blah can be a little bit intimidating. But hiking is one of the biggest things that got me through the toughest times of my life. Because I feel like when you're at your lowest, at least I would tell myself this, well, if you could still feel amazement and wonder at the world when you were just on that hike, there must still be some pretty good things out there. So keep on plugging along. Like to me, the outdoors has always been a huge thing. And so this organization reached out to me called No Barriers, and they're hosting 11 different veteran experiences. In the coming year, it's a combination of backcountry expeditions and base camp experiences. So if you're intimidating by learning how to camp and hike and all that stuff, they take care of it for you. In North Carolina and Colorado, they're covering flights, meals, lodging, equipment. And the goal is to give you a sense of belonging, a clear vision of who you are, because it's easy to get lost after you get out, and just give you some positivity about the future. Like, here's this new hobby. Here's this new thing. Every community that you go to, you're going to find fellow hikers and fellow people. Like, I just have found that hiking and getting outside is massively important to mental health. So it's called nobarrierusa.org, and look for the Warrior Program. Shout out Jenna Martin on Twitter, who reached out to me with that. I looked into it. It looks super legit. But if you're a disabled veteran, go apply if you think this might be something interesting for you. And if you are a nonprofit out there and you have opportunities like this, we're happy to shout them out.
Yeah, but Patrol Base Abate does that same kind of thing. They have returned to base out in Montana. They're actually looking at buying a huge property out there that we'll be able to go to every year. So there's a couple organizations that are like that, and they're fantastic. I actually did something with that organization last night with a little bit of a book club that I'm in there. And let me just say, those motherfuckers love books, dude. Like, if you're in a book club, it's complete. It's a different animal. I was reading. Yeah. We're reading For Whom the Bell Tolls right now. I read the parts of the book that I was supposed to, and then they're doing like literary analysis. I thought they were just going to talk about old Pablo, see what he's getting into. But they were like, "Oh, they used the word dead 17 times in these chapters." I was like, "I would never."
What does that mean? Like, right.
This is wild. They love books, man.
Breaking the military stereotype. We're not just eating crayons. We're reading out there. Yeah. But nobarrierusa.org. Go check it out if that's something that's interesting to you. Also, my second note, Super Bowl this weekend. Fly, Eagles, fly. Let's go. And they're not
the
going to be
Kate,
the only ones
don't
flying.
Want us to get our suit.
Oh, the big game. Pardon me. The big whatever. The flyover. So that's been happening for 55 years now. The Super Bowl flyover is one of the biggest every year. I don't care if you're like, oh, they, it's just propaganda, whatever. I get a freedom boner every time.
Oh, yeah.
I get rock hard whenever it happens. Mm-hmm. And I
whenever
love
it. I'm feeling downtrodden about America, I fire up that 1993 Whitney Houston Super Bowl and just fucking nut Eagles. It's unbelievable.
It works every time. So the first one was organized by Pete Rozelle. Do you recognize the name?
Oh. Yeah, he was the former commissioner.
Yes,
before,
former commissioner of the NFL. But he was also a World War II veteran. So
didn't
he
know that.
Yeah, World War II veteran. He
get
organized.
Him on the show.
We should have him on.
We'll have him on right after Arnold Palmer chats.
Yeah, it'll be great. Yeah.
So Pete Rozelle organized the first flyover in 1968 between the Green Bay Packers and the Oakland Raiders. Back in the day, it was the Air Force that flew over it, and Miami's Orange Bowl and the Super Bowl. So we've been doing these for 55 years now. These flyovers. This year is a special one. Super Bowl or SB Stooby Doop. 57 will feature a pregame flyover with four tactical aircraft squadrons during Chris Stapleton's Star Spangled Banner. That's going to get me
Chris
fucking
Stapleton.
Going.
Chris Stapleton? Yeah. Oh, wrist smooth.
Yeah.
It's going to be very different.
This flyover is going to be much smoother than that, I hope. This year's edition is celebrating the 50th anniversary of the first women naval aviators in the U.S. Navy. Now women can serve and operate and fly anywhere they fucking want in the Navy, but it wasn't always the case. And there's a bunch of women doing the flyover, which is fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's really cool. And those are my only two notes. I'm super excited. I'm going to be down in Philly for the suit. I weaseled my way in. I reached out to the producers. I was like, hey, do you have anyone for Man on the Street after we win? Is anybody doing that? And so now I'm going to Barstool Sansom to watch the game. They got me a hotel. They got me a train.
There
for
you
work.
Go.
It's for work. Woohoo! I am so fucking excited. My eye is blowing up like a balloon. I'm going to power through it. I'm really fucking excited. So this
I want to let you guys in and see how the sausage is made a little bit. Before we started recording, Kate was like, let's keep everything a little bit short. Make sure that we don't go too long today.
Oh, I know.
That's the most save rounds Kate's ever
I've
had.
Ever had.
Yeah.
I know. I'm so sorry. Okay. That's
no, they're all good. They're all good. Mine, I don't know.
Topical.
Mine, I love Mitt Romney and George Santos going
we'll
at
get
it,
into
the,
it. We'll get
okay.
into it. That's
I know. I know we
roundup.
Already talked about it, but I absolutely love the story. If Mitt Romney comes at you, you know, you fucked up. I mean, that's just the way that goes down. I showed my wife the clip that Tom made about the peanut butter and jelly bar. She said I sounded like a fucking idiot on the podcast and that no one in the world would care that I make peanut butter and jelly. And she was like, if your guys' numbers are going down in ZBT, this is the reason why. She's like, if you guys have a dip in numbers over the last month, you could probably just go ahead and put that on peanut butter and jelly, which I didn't think that would happen because I brought Crunchy down to my bedroom. I thought Crunchy would keep me. I'm not going to talk about peanut butter too much longer. Sound retreat.